There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast. For a change with Greg and Colin.
Yeah.
It's actually been a few weeks since
it has been
since we've recorded. So welcome back, Greg.
Thank you.
Well, I guess you recorded with Jacob recently.
I did. Yeah. But it's nice to be back.
Nice to be back in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Speaking of hot seats, you know, as we're recording this in January, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, all those new lists are coming out from all the firms.
Yes. Right? Oh, yes, the lists.
The lists of what you should buy and what you should not buy. So our industry is notorious for putting out these lists, right?
Yeah.
Every major firm puts out their recommended list, or even some of the magazine publications.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like McLean's used to put out something.
Sure. And yeah.
What Money Sense.
What to expect. Best stocks for right now. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. So I guess you could call it peak confidence season.
Yes.
Right? Where every investment firm publishes their top picks, best ideas, highest conviction lists, things like that?
You know, it's interesting, maybe a little off the subject, but when I started in this business 30 years ago, and the firm I joined came up with the single best stock idea.
What was it?
So it was Moore Business Forms.
They're not around anymore, are they?
Not that I know of, no.
Yeah.
They might have morphed into something else, but...
How'd that work out?
Not great. And
the single best.
The single best. Like, why would anybody feel the need to identify the one stock to own if you could only own one?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and just for our compliance people, just to satisfy everybody, we are not recommending any stocks in this show. We're just pointing out these lists that other people have prepared.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we're going to ask this dangerous question is, how did the picks that were made in 2025 by all these firms actually turn out?
Yeah. That's the part that matters. You know, you don't want to conveniently forget that we put out a list 12 months ago of the best ideas.
Yeah. And they're published. You can find them, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you have to look very hard.
No, that's right. You know, and so when it comes to this time of the year, it's not vibes, it's not narratives, it's just math.
Yeah.
How did we do?
How did we do? Good question.
Okay.
Kind of like I had a friend of mine, we're doing this kind of fun weight loss challenge before Christmas, and everybody put down their goals.
Yeah.
And he sent this meme. And it said something like, my goal was to lose, like, it must have been from the UK, like 20 kilograms before Christmas.
Yeah.
It's December 24th and I still have 15 kilograms to go.
Reminds me of the story of the group of men in the sitting around in the YMCA in the steam room and saying, okay, we're going to have a weight loss challenge. And in the end of the guy who won only gained 5 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough time of year anyways, but okay, listen, before we get into it, let's be precise about what this episode is and isn't.
Yes.
So we're only going to use lists that were publicly published in January 2025.
Yes.
With name tickers.
Yeah.
We're not going to use the dealer only PDFs that say for internal purposes only.
Yep.
There's that.
Yeah, and we're not, cherry picking exits or pretending that analysts magically sold at the highs. What we're looking at is, okay, if you held these for the year, how did you do?
Yeah, just looking, okay, you published it in January.
Yeah.
Let's look at it 12 months later and check in on the reality of it. So the first thing we want to talk about is the benchmark that everyone has to beat, right? So benchmarks are important.
Absolutely.
Right? We talk about relative return versus absolute return.
Yep.
You just used the word absolutely, so it reminded me of that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Remember when people were just stuck on that word?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Everything was absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's set that bar right now, Greg.
Okay. Last year, 2025, the S&P TSX Composite Total Return Index, that's the Canadian, the broad Canadian market, returned roughly 29 to 30%.
It's just not a normal year.
No.
Right? I mean, if you look historically at what the market's done, going back decades and decades. It's not 30% a year.
No.
So it was a very strong year for Canada, but not just for Canada, for many equity markets.
It's what we would call good abnormal.
Yeah, it's the that's the volatility that nobody complains about.
That's right.
The upside volatility, right?
Yep. So meanwhile, in the U.S., the S&P 500, one of the sort of typical measures of the U.S. stock market, returned roughly 16.5%.
Yeah.
And global equities were in the low teens, with some, you know, very specific examples of markets that really outperformed. But
yep.
But as far as the broad markets go, U.S., about 16.5%, which is also a very good year.
Abnormally high.
Yep.
Right? Like the historical number in the S&P 500 is somewhere around 8% a year.
8 to 9, I think, yeah.
You know, and of course, how many years in history has it actually returned 8 to 9% per year, Greg?
I don't think it ever has.
Zero.
Yep.
Right? So it's, but what it's going to lead to is, because we manage a globally diversified portfolio.
Yes.
That includes Canada.
Sure.
But our model actually represents the model that Canada makes up in the world.
Yep.
So in that model, you've got less than 3% of our equity exposure to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there's going to be people who are like, why didn't we have more Canada this last year, right? Because if you were a Canadian investor and just owned the TSX, you probably did pretty good.
You did great. You didn't have to pick a single stock. You just had to own the index, and you did great.
That leads us to our first list, Greg.
Yes.
Our first list I want to call out was, it was printed in January of 2025. Mm-hmm. It was printed by a company, I shouldn't say their name, I guess, but it's a Canadian bank.
Let's just say a large Canadian bank.
Yeah, one that starts with a C and ends with a C.
Okay.
You figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, their market technician pointed out the 9 stocks to buy in 2025.
Okay.
And I'll give you the list. ARC Resources, Gibson Energy, Peyto Exploration, Bank of Montreal, Brookfield, Onyx, Aritzia, Empire, and Shopify.
Okay.
Okay. So I look back and said, okay, well, how did these stocks actually do? If you took all of your money and put 11.11% into each stock, you just bought them that way,
sure,
in an equal weight.
Yeah.
Well, that portfolio did 30.51% last year.
Pretty darn good.
It is pretty good. You know, nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
Right?
No. Nope.
But if you compare it to what the XIC did, which is just the iShares Canadian Composite Index.
Yes.
That did 31.53% last year.
Right.
So without taking on the concentration risk of 9 companies.
Yep.
Being more diversified in the same market, you actually had 1% better rate of return.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it makes the point that we've tried to make on this podcast over the last almost 6 years. The markets themselves tend to, deliver excellent returns over time.
Yeah.
You know, and so to take on, as you say, concentration risk of owning too few stocks or being in exactly the wrong one and making a big mistake on one, why take that risk?
More business solutions. What was it called?
Forms, business forms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, because in that list, there was one, I would call it a home run in that list. It was Aritzia. It did almost 120% rate of return last year. But if you look at, ARC Resources, it did 1.76%.
Sure.
Onyx did 0.96%. So,
So you got lucky that you had a big winner to offset those losers.
Sure.
And we've talked, it's something that stuck with me for the last almost 30 years. And that is that research paper that was published by the quantitative analyst at the firm I was with called The Time Cost of Being Wrong. And if you make one bad mistake and you underperform the index by 3%, 4%, 5%, just because of one mistake, it can take you the rest of your investing career to catch up to where you would have been just by buying the index. And that is if you can beat the index in many years. So by being wrong, making a big mistake, it can set you back to a point where you can't actually recover.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look at one of the big lists that came out. And again, I won't call out the bank.
No.
But it's, they have a blue shield and starts with an R.
Maybe the largest Canadian bank. I don't know.
But let's talk about this list because they published it.
Yep.
Right? So they published this top 30 global ideas for 2025 back on January 6th of 2025.
Yeah.
And it's 30 stocks with exact tickers and explicit implied return targets.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did they do? I won't call out all 30.
No.
But a sample of them was Alimentation Couche-Tard, Cameco, Canadian Pacific Kansas City, Constellation Software, ConocoPhillips, First Solar, Illumina, Snowflake, and Viva. I've never heard of Viva.
No, I haven't either.
I don't know what they do.
No.
Should I be acknowledging that on this recorded podcast?
You call yourself an investment advisor and you don't know Viva?
I don't.
What is wrong with you?
Remember when we'd listen to, what was that business channel? Well, BNN, I guess.
Yeah.
And they'd get, you know, analysts on there and people would call in and they'd say, hey, Greg, what do you think about First Transportation?
Yes.
And yeah. Say, oh, you know, it's a great company. It's got a clean balance sheet, excellent management, and, you know, expect it to do good things this year. And then the next caller would call in, hey, Greg, what do you think about Constellation Software? Totally yep. different industry,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great company.
Oh, yeah, no, their earnings came in just a couple of cents ahead of estimate. And
yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, can you possibly...
How do you know everything about everything, right? Hey, Greg, what do you think about gold? Like, you went from First Transportation to Constellation Software to gold to...
Yeah.
Anyways, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, okay, getting back to the list. So they did have these implied returns that were all fairly large. How did it work out?
Well, that's where things get interesting, right? Because... you know, first of all, and again, as we say, the market, you know, delivered 30% in Canada.
So if your stock, one of those stocks was projected, implied, to return 18 to 20%, and the yeah. Canadian market returned 30%,
yeah.
Well, I guess you underperformed, even if the stock went up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's the point. You know, the point is, well, analysts always, that's their job, you know, they look at what everybody knows, which is what the companies have reported. Maybe they go talk to management and try to get kind of an inside track on what they think is going to happen with the company and what some of the unexpected surprises are going to be.
The unexpected surprise.
Exactly.
Versus the expected surprise.
Yeah. And from that, then they apply a price-to-earnings ratio, an expectation of what the PE multiple, as they call it, is going to be to come up with an implied price projection.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as you say, there were a couple of stocks in their list that had implied returns of over 85%, but most of them were in that 18 to 20% range and the index made 30.
Yeah.
So why did you need to go to that trouble?
Exactly.
Although right. at least they gave 30 stocks and not 9.
True. Yeah. A more diversified.
Way more diversified.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, that's Canada, and I don't want to beat up every analyst out there. Actually, I'm friends with some analysts, and they're good people. They work hard, right?
Yeah.
It's just that the odds are against them.
Yeah, it's a very tough job,
yeah.
you know, to be an analyst. And listen, there are many, many firms that depend on those because that's the way they choose to run their business. You know? Mm-hmm. So they buy companies that a variety of analysts have recommended.
Yeah.
And they don't buy indexes. They don't buy ETFs or broadly diversified mutual funds. They pick the stocks. And mm-hmm. and so, the analysts are doing a job.
Yeah.
And in the end, the ones that get closer to the right answer, you know, are the ones that are more highly rated.
Right, right. And so the U.S. is the same, right? U.S. firms in 2025 came out with lists that were confident.
Yeah.
But it was the same problem. So, you know, Argus Research put out top picks for 2025 in January.
Mm-hmm.
So what names are on that list, Greg?
Well, we got Apple, NVIDIA. I think you've probably heard of NVIDIA.
Yeah, I think so. A startup, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Amazon, Netflix, Eli Lilly, Salesforce, Morgan Stanley.
Yeah. All arguably great companies. And actually, Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, those companies, I mean, they're larger than our whole Canadian economy.
Yes.
Right? So there's no argument that those are good companies.
No, but again, they're single stock calls and they're competing against an overall rising market. Some of those companies did extremely well and others not so much.
Yep. Morgan Stanley put out a list early 2025 and it included companies like Seagate, Robinhood, and what is this one? Atlassian?
What? You don't know that company?
I don't know Veeve and I don't know Atlassian. Sorry.
Okay. Well, high conviction and very narrow lists.
Yeah, so the same structural challenges apply, right?
Yep.
So how did they make out? What really happened? Let's talk about the actual outcomes, because this is where the story really shifts. So, you know, mega cap and large cap names, let's talk about their actual 2025 returns.
Yep.
So do you want to go through that?
Sure.
That list?
You know, so some of the names that are very popular on many of these lists, NVIDIA.
Again, that startup.
Yep. That startup, NVIDIA, did very well, up 38.9%. Very strong year.
So more than double what the S&P 500 did.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then there's Alphabet, or Google, that actually was up 65% over the past year. That's kind of a standout. It's one of the...
One of the big,
what do they call them? The Big Seven, or the...
Magnificent Seven.
Magnificence. It's magnificent.
It's magnificent. It's truly magnificent.
It is. Apple, everybody knows Apple. It was up 8.6%. So
What happened there?
Well, it's a return, but it certainly lagged the S&P 500 by
half. Yeah.
And Amazon, again, one of the mega caps, the Magnificent Seven, up 5.2%. So also lagged the U.S. market.
Right.
So, you know, you've got these great companies, but who knows? You know, the outcome can vary wildly.
Yeah, and there were some of the best performers of 2025 that didn't make these lists at all, right?
Yep.
And again, not to sound naive, but I don't know all of these companies, full disclosure, but Seagate was up 226%.
Yep.
Western Digital up 283%. Yep. SanDisk spinoff was up 559%. And Robinhood was up 225%. Those are good returns.
Those are good returns. And listen, maybe a tip of the hat to Morgan Stanley, because Seagate and Robinhood were on their list.
Well, we better focus on their list this year.
So what happens now, that's right, is so now we need to look at Morgan Stanley's 2026 list and make sure that we buy those stocks.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Not.
Yeah. But I mean, the returns came from unexpected shifts in demand cycles and market structure, right? Sure. Like, you again, these were the unexpected surprises.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, I don't even know what a SanDisk spinoff is.
No.
I know that I use the products.
Of course.
Like, actually, in our podcast, we use a SanDisk, I don't know, what's it called?
It's called a, flash drive.
Man, we just had silver moments there.
Techno gurus here. That's got a, whatchamacallit, that you stick into the place, yeah.
Right in the back there. All right, so what's the real lesson here to our listeners?
Well, one is that, you know, you can make projections, but they're just projections.
Yeah.
And the reality is what actually happens, and that's what matters in the end. Secondly, good stocks don't always beat good markets, you know. Nobody would argue that Apple and Amazon are not great companies. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic companies. They're huge companies, but they didn't beat the market.
Yeah.
And number three, which is one that we always, you know, support here, is that benchmarks matter more than opinions.
Yeah.
Because in the end, the benchmark is what the market delivers.
Yeah. That's a really critical one, because I've been sort of warning a lot of investors that we've been spoiled with returns these last 2+ years.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you could argue that we're 4 years into a bull market in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And those bull markets tend to last about 5 years in duration.
Sure.
So it's not that we haven't appreciated the returns that we've received, but just sort of setting the stage for, well, what happens when the market goes down?
Yeah.
Right? That's where that relative return becomes really important,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you know, it's one thing to say, okay, well, whatever that company was, SanDisk did 559% last year.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
But, you know, let's say we're going into a bear market and the market sells off, I don't know, 20, 30%,
mm-hmm.
which probably will happen at some point.
Sure.
Well, it will happen at some point, right?
Yeah.
Then you're going to want to compare your returns to actually what the market did.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So even if you got a, let's say, a negative 10% return in your portfolio when the market was down 20%,
yeah,
you actually probably did pretty good.
That's a win.
Yeah, it's a win.
That's a win. So what happened? So if you owned a diversified markets in 2025,
yeah,
you won.
Yeah.
And if you chased top pick lists, you might have actually done okay, mm-hmm. but you had to work a lot harder and take on more risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, in the end, that's why we build portfolios around evidence and not what seems to be the situation in January of every year.
Well, think back to January of last year. We weren't even really talking about what was going to happen in February.
Yeah.
Right? In February, there was a bunch of tariffs announced.
Exactly.
Right? Like that wasn't really priced in January.
No. And in April, Liberation Day, I mean, the markets were down close to 20% or just about 20%.
Yeah.
Around that time. Didn't last long. But who predicted that?
Those were the unexpected surprises, Barrett.
Exactly. You know, what you need to do if you're going to be in this game is you need to expect surprises.
Yeah.
But you just don't know whether they're good surprises or bad surprises.
One of the things that always bugs me from some of the analyst reports and whenever you watch these people on various media channels is the term cautiously optimistic.
Yes.
I hate that term.
Yeah.
Can't stand it when I hear people say, well, we're cautiously optimistic. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like you're either optimistic or you're not.
That's right. So you either believe that things will get better than they are today or they won't.
Yeah.
And if you're optimistic, then you believe they will get better than today.
Yeah.
And so if you're being cautious about it, I mean, big deal.
Yeah.
things will either be better, you know, or if you're saying, well, I don't know whether to be optimistic or pessimistic, that's a different story.
I would actually appreciate that wording versus cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I would appreciate if somebody came out and said, look, we really don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but I do know that if somebody stayed invested in a diversified portfolio for a number of years,
yeah,
the chance of your portfolio being higher than in 10 years than it is today is pretty good.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, so that's a prediction you're making right now.
I am making a prediction that over the next 10 to 20 years, Greg,
yeah,
the stock markets will be higher than they are today.
Ooh, okay. I'm gonna make a note of that.
Yeah. Hold me to it.
We're gonna hold you to that.
All right.
Okay.
Is that it for today?
You betcha.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by, and are not necessarily those of, Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice, and should not be relied as such.